Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mike Evans is on the mend, but will he be in the lineup on Saturday at Washington? And Chase Young says he wants Tom Brady. Bruce Arians says, careful what you wish for. No fans at FedEx this Saturday, no Devin White either. And the Lightning open training camp today, Steven Stamkos is back and better than ever. We've got all that and more on this edition of Sports Day Tampa Bay. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with Steve Versnick. Hey, you know who's got the best party platters for your catering in Tampa Bay? This year, last year, every year, it's Mr. Empanada. What the heck's an empanada? Well, here's what you do. You take your favorite foods. You place them inside a pocket of homemade dough that is cooked perfectly until it's golden brown and piping hot. Their empanadas are a fresh twist on some old favorites. Now, you can order delicious menu items now made from scratch, including soups and salads and Cuban sandwiches. Just go online at MrEmpanada.com or call any one of their 7 convenient locations in Tampa Bay, where Latin food quality and service meet. That's Mr. Empanada. All right, Steve, we're going to talk a lot about the Bucks and other things going around, including the Lightning opening training camp today. But you were at the, well, what do I call them, the Tampa Bay Raptors? I guess they're still technically the Toronto Raptors.
They still say we the North. So
we the North, even though we in the South.
Right.
But, okay, so we the North. You went to the Raptors game, and they were playing the Boston Celtics. And I thought the Raptors were good. I mean, you know, if they're going to play here, they got quite a bit to live up to. I mean, we suddenly have had nice things. I know we can't have nice things, but we have had them for a while. So what's with this bad start that they got going here?
Well, they got off to a really hot start tonight. They were, up like 19-8 early and dominating and hitting everything from outside. And look, I'm not much of an NBA guy. I don't watch a ton of it, catch it periodically on television, but what I generally think of the NBA is they started hitting threes early, so then it became we're shooting nothing but threes the rest of the game. And when you get cold, the other team comes back, and, you know, that's what seemed to happen. You know, you brick those threes, and they're running the other way, and it's, you know, it's like a five-point swing, essentially, or six if they hit a three. So Raptors got down by 26 at one point, came back. I think they lost by 10 or 11.
Oof.
Let's see, 126 to 114, so it was a 12-point loss, but.
Yeah, no one's playing defense in the NBA anymore. I love it. You see some of these scores, man, they're just so out of whack. But
it was fun to have fans in the stands and see a live sporting event. I mean, I did see a Bucks game earlier this year. I was at the Saints game. That was a disaster.
But it makes some difference, right? I mean, it's a smattering of crowd. What do they got, less than 4,000 there?
It's about 3,800 that they got in the building. I'm assuming the Lightning will be similar to that. They haven't announced what they're going to do for Lightning, but pretty sure they're going to, you know, they've been sending season ticket
CDC
holders
thing,
fans,
really.
So.
Yeah.
CDC, city, state. Also, whatever. You know, the league's regulations. I mean, there's, you know, having worked with the teams, I know that there's a lot of things as far as, you know, how many rows back from behind the glass or they're not going to be allowed seats, and that can vary different from the NBA, et cetera. You know, just in how the seats are configured and everything else. So. You know, so it'll probably be around 3,800, could be up 4,000, maybe, you know, somewhere in that range. It all depends on, you know, the NBA's got its own protocols, so do the NHL. And Brad Stevens from the Celtics doesn't think very highly of Florida's response to COVID at this point. This was their first game, I guess, in front of fans, and didn't seem happy that Florida lets fans in, but says, I trust the NBA and their rules and regulations, so.
So they feel unsafe even though they're behind glass, essentially?
I don't know unsafe, but he made some comments of the governor in Florida has handled this very differently than our governor in Massachusetts. So.
Well, that's true. Well, that's true for sure. Like, we can say that there's not a whole lot that that the Commonwealth of Massachusetts holds with Florida, except that we've both had Tom Brady.
Well, so that leads me into a conversation that our good friend Steve Carney and I were having. At the game tonight, and because Boston was in town, we were talking about, you know, Massachusetts, and we brought up the Patriots, and he says, you remember back to week one of the NFL season? Belichick won, Brady nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the you know the Bucs lost to the Saints in predictable fashion, considering new offense, new players, no offseason, no preseason, etc., and playing the division champs in the Saints.
Yeah.
And, you know, Belichick had Cam Newton there, and, you know.
Cam actually played okay, I think.
And
the whole state
of Massachusetts and New England were claiming that Belichick was the king, and Brady was nothing after 20 years of, you know, nine Super Bowls. And, wow, let's see, 16 weeks later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the worm has turned, and now Cam Newton has, I guess they've pretty much agreed without actually, you know, making this necessarily a statement, but they both, I guess, have agreed that this won't work or won't happen again next year. I remember the early weeks of Cam Newton. There were, you know, plenty of talking heads on television and other places, you know, around the NFL, and they were talking about how, you know, that the Patriots got an absolute steal, and how did Cam Newton make it on the market as long as he did? And of course, he has a bigger upside than Tom Brady at this stage. And if he can run, if he's healthy, you know, on and on and on. And, you know, it's amazing to me. If you think about a guy that is 43, right, no one's ever played this long, much less this well, at the quarterback position in the NFL. But if you think about it, like, how many times in his career, right, 21 years now, have people just written him off? I mean, from the start, obviously, at Michigan, I mean, you know, all that, right? But even after being in 9 Super Bowls in 20 years or winning 6 Super Bowls in of the 9, and I know there will come a point where Father Time is undefeated, but my goodness, they just continue to write this guy off every year, and it's like fuel on a furnace. He goes out there and throws for like 4,600 yards, 40 touchdowns. Are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. 40 touchdowns? I mean, you know, don't tug on Superman's cape. Just don't do it, man.
Well, I'm looking at a tweet from Pro Football Focus. It says he had 1,233 deep passing yards this season. That's the most he's ever had in a season.
Can't throw the deep ball.
Yep.
Offense doesn't fit him. Come on. Listen, we watched his arm in practice. They watched it on – I remember – talking to, I think it was Clyde Christensen, was tasked with doing reports. You know, they do these for free agency on every quarterback that was going to become a free agent. Well, if you remember, the free agent class was like, you know, stellar.
Philip Rivers, Teddy Bridgewater, Tom Brady.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible.
And Jameis Winston.
Winston was part of it. And
Cam Newton.
They're doing, right. Cam Newton was on there. They're doing all these guys. And the Red Rocket, right? Andy Dalton was part of that because they thought maybe he might shake loose. So he says, I'm sitting here doing a report on Tom Brady. Like, how stupid is this? Like, intangibles. Oh, I don't know. 1-6 Super Bowls. You know, like, leader, this, that, and the other. But, yeah, it's funny to look back and say, you know. And, look, I mean, we wrote plenty of stories about how they didn't seem to be meshed up. It didn't seem like, you know, they were going there fast enough, that there was a disconnect between what Brady needed in the offense and what they were doing. And look, all that took time. And I think the biggest thing was just that time on the practice field, time with his guys, you know, and they were adding guys like Fournette and, like, you know, Antonio Brown and people like this. And so every time they would, it would, they'd take, you know, 2 steps forward and 1 step back. And so, you know, they eventually got there, and they got there after the bye week sometime, and they're on an absolute roll. And, you know, these last 4 or 5 weeks or whatever it's been, I mean, this team's averaging 37 points a game, you know, and Brady has just, you know, lit it up. And so it's funny, you know, it's amazing to me that anybody who grew up or watched Brady in Boston or in the New England area, when he came to Tampa Bay, that anybody up there would doubt him. I mean, really? After what, you know, and yet he's got plenty of followers. And believe me, you know, I think there's probably more subscribers or as many in towns in New England to the Tampa Bay Times just to follow what he does as there is in Tampa Bay. But,
well, and to doubt him when there's this many weapons here, which he never had in New England, maybe 2007, because you had Randy Moss.
And he threw 50.
Yeah.
That's the only other year, by the way, he threw more than this season. You realize this is the second most touchdowns in his career?
Yep.
and the most since that year you just mentioned, 2007, when they went undefeated and they were about to be 18-0 until David Tyree pinned a ball in his helmet and, you know, Eli Manning should have been sacked, and then they went on to beat
them. 72 Dolphins popped the champagne.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it would have been 18-0. It was
19-0 would have been.
19-0, right. Yep. It was one of the weirdest years I've ever seen, you know, for them to lose that Super Bowl just didn't seem possible. But the Giants had their number not once but twice. So, but yeah, to doubt this guy, I know I never will. I look, at some point he's gonna quit, and he'll know when that time is. But if he's out there and he's playing, you can bet he's going to do some pretty special things. And yeah, it is funny to look back on it now and say, so how good of a coach was Bill Belichick? And look, I think he's a terrific coach.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think he's a terrific. I don't know that he's the best GM, however. I don't, because if you go through his drafts, he's had a lot of misses. I think at times he did better with other guys, you know.
Well, I think they struggled this year too. Didn't they have some dead cap money because of
Tom
Brady this year too?
They had a lot of opt-outs. A lot of players opted out because of COVID.
But I think they had some dead money with Brady too, with the way they had structured his
contract.
Dead
a little bit,
Kind of what New Orleans is going to face, although they're in a worse case when Drew Brees retires.
Yes, and that seems to be there. Was there a report? I don't know. I'm starting to see more reports about how, no, this is the year. We thought last year was the year, and I would have told you, I'd have bet a good portion of my salary that he was going to retire last year, because I went to the Pro Bowl, and man, let me tell you, he was smelling the roses. He was taking a victory lap. He had his kids on the field, and he looked
for
all
the
world.
I saw that
there
too.
Yeah, I mean, he looked like, this is a little different, you know, and he decided to come back, and you know, now he's got 11 cracked ribs and a punctured lung later, and a deal, apparently a contract with NBC to do broadcasting, you know, next year. So I think this will be his last hurrah. Who knows? But yeah, but man, I mean, Brady, I would expect to play unless the confetti falls on his head, and maybe even then, you know, it's not like
it's fallen six other times.
Other times, and he kept coming. I mean, listen, if you're not going to walk away after the 28-3 Super Bowl in Atlanta, after you brought them back and won in overtime, you know, the greatest of all, you know, the greatest comeback of all time in the Super Bowl, if that wasn't going to be your walk-off shot, that's like Jordan hitting a three and then saying, nah, you know, I think I'll go play for the Wizards, you know. But this is not
that did happen.
Yeah, wait. But this is not this is not Michael Jordan with the Wizards. You know, this is Tom Brady, you know, as he was in New England with a better team, with better players around him and deeper team. And to that point, it's a damn good thing they are a deep team, because and I'll be happy to raise my hand about this, because I thought it was screwing him up at the time. You know, if Mike Evans can't get back, and we think that he will, but if he can't get back, isn't it a good thing now, Bucks fans, that they went ahead and I know there's a lot of reasons why Antonio Brown is not liked, maybe shouldn't be in the NFL, and has a ton of baggage and a carousel that he comes with. But I'll tell you what, the guy's balling, and you can see the progress he's made with Brady in this offense. And, you know, when Evans went down, to see him and Godwin, you know, sort of take over that game, you know, from a receiving standpoint, was really something. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, this offense has been hot. It's been hot for a while, and they just, you know, they just keep piling it on. I mean, even if Mike can't get back, and then the latest update on him, we told you, you know, I think yesterday, that it's good news that, you know, he had no structural damage. They did the MRI. And when you say no structural damage, you mean no torn ligaments, no cartilage, that sort of thing. That would require some kind of surgery, no ACL, thank God, because it looked bad. It was really hyperextended. When you see the replay, it's like, ugh, I don't remember looking at it quite that way, but it was bad. But you know what? First thing this morning, Bruce Arians walks into the Advent Health Center, and they got this sort of hydro center in their training facility, which is like a 10,000 square foot facility off to the side of the building. And there's Mike Evans, and they got this, it's basically like a small pool or tub filled with water, and there's a treadmill on the bottom of it. And he's in there running on the treadmill in the water, which, of course, you know, the gravity takes the pressure off the weightless, so it takes pressure off the joints and stuff. But he said there's very minimal swelling, if none at all. And they think he's going to practice Thursday. And, you know, if and like Arian says, he goes, look, we'll have to fight him to keep him off the field. You bet you will have to fight him now because this guy's waited 7 years to play in a postseason game. If there's any way he can put that uniform on and walk out there or run out there, he's going to do it. So, you know, he said 80% of Mike is better than 100% of a lot of guys. And I mean, at this point, they think maybe he'll practice Thursday and play on Saturday. It's amazing.
That is amazing. And you know, I mean, you mentioned how on Saturday the Bucks fans went from honoring him for being the first player ever with 1,000 yards for 7 straight seasons to start a career.
Yeah.
To the next play getting hurt and you're going, oh, no.
It was incredible. You know, that moment, like, I'm so grateful that he is, because Mike's a good guy and you hate to see anybody get hurt in football. But particularly, can you imagine, like, it was such a swing of emotions. Like, he gets a standing ovation. I know there were 16,000 people there. Forget it. But anybody that knows anything about Mike, Mike's a good dude. Like, Mike does a lot of things in the community that he does not seek credit for. Some of it has become public because they're just exceptional. He's the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee for them again this year. But he, you know, he's been so consistent. It's hard to find guys that, and he's grown, you know, he's grown as a player, he's grown as a man. I've watched him, you know, get married to Ashley and have a couple kids, and he's a good dad, and he just, you know, he does so many things. He helps young players like Chris Godwin. We'll go on and on about how much Mike has meant to him in his career. And to think that you would make that play, and it meant a hell of a lot to him, by the way. Like, you know, there was a time about a couple weeks ago we thought, there's no way he's going to get there. And then he had that incredible game against the Lions where I thought he was going to get it that day. But he starts the game 40 yards, needing 40 yards for 1,000. And, you know, in the first quarter, they throw 3 passes to him. The last one's a 20-yarder, and he gets the record. And everybody's on their feet. And you got a little lump in your throat, and you're like, you know what, good for you. I mean, they've been playing this game for 100 years, right? And you're the only player to have done this, right? 7 straight years to start your career. You take that with you wherever you go, right? Mm-hmm. If it's Canton or not. And the scoreboard's lit up. And before people could sit down, and I'm telling you, the most open touchdown I think he'd have had in his career. Like, there's no – he runs an in route, and somebody blows the coverage, and he's wide open. And the ball's a little bit behind him, so he twists back. And when he does, his leg just got kind of, you know, hung up in the grass, and he hyperextended it. And it really did hyperextend. You can see the turf give way, and there's about a 4-foot divot, you know, going across the end zone there, which wasn't a good, you know, wasn't a good look for the TSA necessarily or whoever maintains that field. And they had just played the Outback a day earlier, so you wonder. But, you know, and then to see him go down, and you're like, I mean, you could feel when we say the air was taken out of everybody's lungs, it was taken out of that stadium because everybody gasped at the same time. And you could hear a jaw drop. It was so quiet, and people were like, "We can't be watching this. Like, this can't be that the play after he breaks the record, that he's not gonna get to play in the postseason after 7 years. That, you know, you might be looking at a 9-month rehab if this is an ACL. And he stands up. You're like, okay, start walking, and then he sits back down. You're like, oh God." And it was just surreal. And they take him off, and you don't know what's going on. They take him for an MRI. So, listen, it could have been so much worse. And you're just happy that, you know, first and foremost, that he's going to be okay. But then secondly, that he'll get a chance to run out there, hopefully play and play at a high level. I don't know how he's going to be. I still think it's iffy. But like I said, he's played all year. He's played hurt, played when he probably shouldn't have played in Chicago and some other places. But you know, Mike's attitude is, look, this is my job and I got to come to work every day. And some days he said this before, he goes, you know, I'm sure, you know, the mailman doesn't feel like going to work some days, but he gets up and he goes and he delivers the mail, you know? And, so, you know, he's going to get out there and, you know, good for him. But it was an incredible emotional, like, you know, couple of plays there that was just hard to describe, but I'm glad he's going to be okay. But they're not going to have fans at Washington, so you remove that element, right?
Yes, night we established that I don't think there's going to be snow. Now no fans,
no home field advantage. I mean, basically, you're walking into an empty stadium. I don't know what the turf is up there. It's going to be cold. Like Bruce Arians said today, or, you know, he was, I guess it was on, on Monday, said that, look, when it gets to be this time of year and you're up north, it's going to be about 32, around freezing. So the field's going to be sloppy. I mean, they've got the day before, there's supposed to be rain and sleet. So not like they're going to dry that out. But so it'll be slippery like it always is this time of year, but yeah, it could be a hell of a lot worse, and you know, they're going to have to fix the cleats and do all those things they do, but there's no home field advantage there, you know, to speak of. What you have, I mean, think about the Washington football team. Like probably right about this week in the Tampa Bay Times, I was thinking about what a year those guys have had, right? You start the season and you don't have a name. They take away the Redskins, which is very controversial, but they took it away, and you become the Washington football team, okay? And so no logos, just how, you know, numbers on the helmet, all that. Ron Rivera comes in, and he gets cancer. Mm-hmm. He's battling cancer in his first season there. The owner's being sued by his partners, right? There's all kinds of horrible stories in Sports Illustrated and other places about just a grotesque culture of
sexual harassment,
and you know, the owner is you know, got a, I think a lawsuit that he, you know, he paid somebody civilly, and you know, against all of this, you start the season and the NFC East is just a train wreck, right? Nobody has a winning record. You start out, you know, Dwayne Haskins is going to be your guy. You end up cutting the guy before the season is over. For gosh sakes, your former first-round pick and future quarterback. And Alex Smith, who's had 17 surgeries and spent about 600 days away from football, not only just makes it back, right, makes it back on the practice field, makes it back on the sidelines as their number three quarterback at the time, but now he's leading you, and you win the – I don't care how you did it. I don't care what the record is. You win the NFC East. It's incredible. Like, their year has been one headline after one, and not necessarily the ones that you want. But I'll tell you what they do have. They got one hell of a defense.
Mm-hmm.
And they got some young guys, man. I'm telling you, man, these young dudes, man, Chase Young. Speaking of young, Chase Young, which is a perfect name for a guy that chases people, and he's young.
Mm-hmm.
But Chase Young, Montez Sweat. I mean, these dudes, you know, Ryan Kerrigan has been around for a long time. They flat out, like, they're relentless. Like, they just, the energy that Young brings and just every down. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, Donovan Smith, don't take a playoff, buddy. You know, and this is the thing. The Bucs have had kryptonite this year. It's been what? Teams that can rush the passer, right? The Chicago Bears, the New Orleans Saints.
Well, it's always been Brady's kryptonite. I mean,
yeah,
that's why he lost the Super Bowl in the perfect season. That's why he lost
both
of them to the Giants, his first two losses.
No question.
It was pass and rush, and he was watching his feet instead of downfield.
Yeah, he's very uncomfortable. No one likes to get hit, much less at 43. But and the thing is, you know where Tom's going to be. I mean, Tom's going to be in the pocket. He doesn't have the escapability. You know, he's not going to, you know, extend plays. He can get on the edge, and he can do some things. But for the most part, he needs a clean pocket. And you know, I would be very leery of playing these guys. It was funny. I don't know if you saw it. It's gone viral. But like coming off the field after the Eagles tanked, Chase Young was yelling, "I want Tom Brady! I want Tom! I want Tom Brady!" Remind me of like of Apollo Creed yelling at Rocky. You know, "I want you! I'm taking you!" But anyway, it was you know, that's who this kid is. I mean, when I say kid, he's a captain. He's a captain. He's a freaking rookie. You know, it's like, but he is, he's something to watch now. They got some good young players. And, you know, if Alex Smith is leading them, you know, he's not going to make the big mistake for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And they may not score a lot of points, but you may not get a lot of points. And so it's really a, you know, it's, you know, strength against strength, right? The defense for the Redskins, or the Redskins, here I go. Defense for the Washington football team against the Bucs offense. And can they score enough? Because I don't think Washington's going to score a ton. You know, even without Devin White.
Well, I saw you answered one of your followers' Twitter questions earlier today about what they need to do, what they need in Washington, and you responded: a warm press box, a running game, and keep Tom Brady clean.
That's what I need. It's right. What do you need in Washington? Well, I need heaters. I hate going in the cold. Like, I'm a wimp. I grew up in Florida. I can't handle cold. Everybody knows this. I'll go play in snow for a couple days. Like, I'll go to Colorado back when you could travel. We can't anymore, but when you could. And, you know, to me, like, if you have a mentality of, okay, I'm going to be cold, but I'm skiing, so it's cool. Like, I can do this. Then that's a little different. But when you're just there in it, traveling in and out, playing airports. You know, the thing is, you got to layer up. Like, I've never understood. There's a couple things that scare me. You've lived in the cold a lot in your life, right?
Yeah, I don't care if I ever see snow again.
Is that right? Is that how you feel about
it? See, my wife likes the snow.
She does. Okay.
So she grew up in Memphis. So,
I went to college at Arkansas State. Right. And so when it snowed you were like grateful.
It's like a quarter of an inch, and in 12 hours it's gone. I mean, exactly.
But you were grateful. Yeah. You're like, it's snowing. Right. It's cool.
Yeah. And when we lived in Minneapolis, we rented apartments up there. So she likes the snow because she's never had to shovel it.
Exactly.
I grew up having to shovel snow.
Right. That's not fun.
No, I'd rather mow the grass all year long than shovel snow in the winter.
So you get one of those, like I saw on Twitter, there, this guy out there with a flamethrower in his driveway. You see that? What the hell, man? Burn the house down. But it works. It works fast.
I remember one Christmas I was in college, or maybe it was right after college. And so you go home for Christmas, and, you know, you get home like Christmas Eve or something, and you hang out with a couple of buddies, next door neighbor who was a best friend growing up, and, you know, we hang out that night. You're up late. And Christmas morning, there he is out shoveling the driveway. My mom's like, go out and shovel the driveway. I'm like, why did I come home?
Exactly. What? I didn't come home to do this. I could have stayed over there.
I did it, but, you know, it's like Christmas morning. What am I shoveling snow for?
I know.
I much so prefer true. The shorts wearing here. I mean, this past Christmas was cold. I didn't like this.
See, we did. Now, I will say this, because there's one thing about growing up in Florida. Like, you take the good with the bad. To me, this right now is my favorite time of year in Florida.
Oh, absolutely.
Bar none, because we know how damn hot it's going to get, mm-hmm. right? And yes. once the last cold front comes through, say about next week, then it's done. Then you're done. Occasionally you'll get a nice spring where maybe you have some 70-degree days or some occasional 60-degree morning, but that is it. And we know where the mercury is going. It's headed up. And so we would, instead of a white Christmas, you know, the old Bing Crosby song, we would be dreaming of a cold Christmas, which to us, anything under 60 was woohoo. You know, it feels like Christmas. So this was awesome to me. Like, my kids were, I don't know if they were digging it as much, but I was like, mm-hmm. I like putting on the jacket and the sweater and, you know, being cold around Christmas time. I thought it was great. I loved it.
Yeah. The difference in the North and South is, in the South, the summertime, you stay inside the whole time. And you go out in the fall, the winter, and the spring. In the North, you stay inside the whole winter, and you go outside in the summer, and the spring, and the fall. The difference is whichever place you live in, when you go outside, you don't have to put on 28 layers and then take them back off when you go back inside.
See, and that's it. That's the thing that gets me, man, because you put on all these clothes, the long underwear, whatever it is required, right? You get sweaters, shirts, jackets, scarves, whatever. You got to cover every part of your body or something's going to freeze, hat. And then you walk inside, which, you know, we're not going to ramble outside our whole lives. We're going to go into a store. We're going to go into a restaurant, whatever. And then it's like absolute, I got to take off my scarf and take off my gloves and take off my hat and put my jacket. It's laborious. It's like, I'm tired of it. You know, it's a thing. It's like, it's so tiresome. The other thing is, I never want to think that if I get in my car one day, and I drive out of my house down the street someplace, that if something happens, God forbid, tire flat, run out of gas, car stalls, whatever, okay, that if that occurs, I could die. Like, there's no reason car trouble should kill you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's annoying as hell, and you might feel like, you know, jumping out in front of traffic when it happens to you. There's nothing worse than car trouble, don't get me wrong. But, like, if I just got stuck, if I had something happen where it's like, my car's not going anywhere. If the options are, I'm part of the Donner Party, right? I mean, how many, like, seriously, like, if you could be stuck somewhere where there's no traffic, no one's coming by to save you.
When we lived in Minneapolis, a lot of people, when it was the coldest weather, below zero and the wind chills really cold.
Brutal.
You didn't turn off your car to fill up with gas.
No.
And that's not safe.
No.
But
First thing they tell you to do is turn off your car.
But the chances of your car not starting once you fill it up was reasonable. So,
yeah.
You know, particularly if your car was a little older than that or not in the best of condition, that you didn't turn off your car to pump gas.
Mm-mm. Yeah, and so you risk the flash fires, but that's okay. At least you'll be warm that way. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to be, hey, I was driving to, and I realized that when I was, because when I was going to college outside of Memphis in Jonesboro, Arkansas, I would cover high school football and basketball, and particularly basketball because that was more in the winter, dead winter time. And, you know, you had to drive. Like Jonesboro, there was some high schools there, but like I was assigned to like, you know, 25 miles away or whatever. And so I'm driving through these little Arkansas towns on these two-lane roads, and I can remember distinctly, we had a couple winters there. I was only there a couple years, but we had one winter there where it snowed a lot. I don't know why. It just did. First year, nothing. Second year, tons of snow. But we were having a particularly bad snowstorm, and it's one of those where you go into the gym at, you know, 6:30, and then when you come out at 9, you literally can't find your car because it's under a pile of snow to where it's unrecognizable, and you're going around wiping off cars to figure out which one's yours. So it had snowed a lot, and I was a Florida kid. I didn't drive in this crap. So I can remember like what normally would be maybe a 20-minute drive took me 2.5 hours. Because seriously, because, you know, first of all, you're white knuckling it the whole way, and then they have these bridges, and then of course when you go over a bridge, they're not insulated because there's no ground beneath them. So it's you're essentially hydroplaning on ice across bridges and hoping that you don't get sideways. And I'm telling you, man, that gave me an education. I was like, you know, and you're seeing cars out on the side of the road, and they're in drifts, and they're buried, and they're backwards, and you're like, what am I going to do? Like, if that happens to me, like, I'll die out of here because your car shuts down, or worse yet, you keep running it, and the exhaust pipe has a bunch of snow, and you get carbon monoxide poisoning. Like, these are the things you think about when you're 20 years old.
When I got my driver's license, so I grew up in Northwest Ohio. I got it in the wintertime. And the first time I went out by myself, just got the license. I forget what I was going to, a friend's house or something. And I'm going down the road right in front of our high school. The school wasn't in, so I don't, you know, maybe a weekend or, you know, whatever. And I remember I hit some black ice.
Ugh.
And I start spinning. And somehow I actually hit the steering wheel the proper way, and you go the opposite way of the way you're spinning, you keep turning back and forth. And I was able to catch it and go forward. And I was like, all right, I got this. And then I was comfortable from then on out driving in snow and that. But I mean, you know, until you experience that.
Yeah. I don't think I would have reacted quite as well.
Well, I was also dumb and 16. I mean, you know,
Yeah. That wasn't so bad.
Yeah. I was like, hey, that was cool.
That's right. It's like the Secret, man.
Yeah, we moved to Minneapolis, where I started in like October. My wife didn't come up till December. And so when we drove into town, it was snowing
and
cold and that. So the next day, she goes to meet me for lunch. I had to work, and so she comes to meet me for lunch, and it was 5-10 miles, something like that, from where we lived. And so she pulls up, and I come out of the building, and you know, it's snowing outside, and she's like, "You're driving." That's the first time she'd ever driven in any kind of snow that was more than, you know, a quarter of an inch and melting quickly and stuff. So it's a learned skill to do that.
It's different, man. It's different. So we won't have the snow, I don't think. A little ice maybe the day before, and then, you know, around freezing, which a lot of these guys, at least some of the key players that have playoff experiences, Antonio Browns and Gronkowski's and Brady's and you know, some of these, even Ryan Jensen, some of these guys, Jason Pierre-Paul, they played in it. So, shouldn't bother them. Don't know how the other guys will do, but, certainly shouldn't bother them. I'm interested in how this works out. Arians did say, and rightfully so, he's mad. Look, he's ticked with the NFL. I mean, the NFL, here were their choices. So, you know, you've got three games each day And it's pretty clearly, you know, with Aaron Rodgers getting the bye, right, in one division and Patrick Mahomes getting the bye in the other division. So you want to have the marquee quarterbacks win primetime, okay? Mm-hmm. So that means that the Saints have to play one primetime game, and then the Bucs you want on the other night, whatever, however it works. So Alvin Kamara is in the same boat, essentially, as Devin White. So, and none of this happens in a vacuum, by the way. These conversations occur. They didn't pull these pairings out of a hat. So they decide that, you know, Kamara is, I mean, he's got to be 55, 60% of their total offense. I mean, the guy does everything for Breeze. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you want, if I was running the league, I'm just telling you, if I was running the league, I'd be like, hey, in the NFC, we're going to have Breeze, Brady, and Rodgers in some combination for the championship, right? We'll even give Russell Wilson a chance. But those three quarterbacks, I want in the championship game, two of them. However it works out, you know, we're going to give them the best path we can that's possible. Now, you know, the Bucs are already a wild card, so what can you do? So they had Breeze was going to play one night and Brady's going to play the other night. And so it's either, well, if we take away Kamara, I mean, he's more than half their offense. Yeah, the Bucs can beat Washington without Devin White. Let's give them the Saturday game. I mean, I'm telling you, you know, it wasn't an oversight. It just wasn't, right? Because when I check with the NFL and I'm like, look, you guys have been all over the map with these protocols. You've had PCR tests for a while and then mm-hmm. you didn't. And like, what is the deal with Devin White? Like, is there anything him you guys playing on Saturday he can do? Nope, non-negotiable. Oh, okay. Thanks. So, yeah, non-negotiable. He's got to be out 10 days.
But to play the devil's advocate, and Bruce Arians being mad, I get it, and it's understandable. But the Saints won their division. The Bucs didn't.
Great point.
Shouldn't the Saints get preferential treatment in that case? I mean, shouldn't we reward division
better.
Winners?
Yes. Now I would say yes.
No, I don't. I don't think they're punishing the Bucs. I don't. You know,
you know,
I don't
who
think
also won their division though? Just to play your game, the Washington football team.
Yeah.
And they had to play Sunday night.
Yeah.
Well, so you're making them. They have the shortest amount of time possible to go from a Sunday night game to a Saturday. Well, they could have played Saturday afternoon, but a Saturday night game. They got one less day to prepare, now, plus the night.
There's one thing to note about the Saturday night game, and this is always a hard one for the NFL, but Saturday night is one of the lowest rated nights in television. Friday night is worse. Saturday night's low.
This is college football, but
well,
yeah.
But overall, Saturday night television viewing is one of the lowest nights of the week. Friday's lower. Saturday's the next one.
Right.
So you've put a matchup of Tom Brady, the GOAT, against a big market in Washington. That's why they put that on Saturday night.
So New Orleans and Chicago doesn't work.
Chicago's
for you on
a big
Saturday?
Market, and Drew Brees. But if you're gonna pick what could draw the most audience at a time when people don't watch as much television. Brady versus Washington's better than Chicago at New Orleans.
Maybe
it is. Now,
of course, I think they've proven whenever they play these games, they're the highest rated show that day because
yes.
We had Tuesday games, we had Wednesday games, we had Wednesday afternoon games. Like, they outdrew everybody. So.
But in the NFL, you know, on Sunday afternoon, people watch NFL football. So that appointment viewing's there, but there's not NFL on Saturday night. So you've got, how do you get people to tune in, change your Saturday night plans to tune in for that? So you put the GOAT versus a very big market in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, no, I get it. I mean, look, everything's about television.
Oh, absolutely.
And those two guys are going to play on one day one was going to play at night, and the other day the other one was. So, yeah, Arians has every right to complain. But
sure.
Listen, if they can't beat, you know, which is probably a much better than we give them credit for, Washington team, but nonetheless, one that was not even 500 and in a division that can't be, there's no way that the NFC East this year, with the injuries they had to Dak and others, there's no way that it's a better division than the NFC South. There's just no way. You know, even Atlanta, which, you know, as badly as they played, they still could rise up and you know, be right there with Kansas City or hang 17 in the first half on the Bucs. If you can't go in there and outscore these guys, you know, even if it's maybe not 37 or 30, but, you know, 28-17 or 28-20 or whatever, then you don't deserve to move on anyway. I mean, I feel like they're a better football team, and they're playing better, right? They've got to contain that defense. That's going to be the key. They better have a good game plan to get the ball out of Tom's hands, and they better run the ball some, because he's not going to stand back there and get hit all day. That's when you get the interceptions and the punts and everything else you don't want to do. So,
well, you might see some of more of those shovel passes and things like that too get the ball out of his hands quick. I mean,
the kind that make Antonio Brown $250,000. Was that not unbelievable? I've done this a while, as you know, and I don't think I have ever seen. And look, I credit Bruce Arians, I guess, or whoever was in charge of knowing that, you know, Antonio Brown on the last series of the game needed three receptions to hit 45 and make his $250,000. Somebody had the counter all day, and look, if Mike Evans doesn't get hurt, I don't think Brown has enough opportunities, even in the last series, to get to 45. But I mean, to give away $250,000 and say, here you go, we're gonna give you pop passes here so that you can get this record or get this incentive. That's pretty cool.
Well, like,
how you get guys to want to come play for you. By the way,
but in all honesty, it ain't Bruce's money.
No, but it's the ownership's money.
But I'm saying Bruce is doling it out, ain't his money.
I know. Well, hey, Bruce is good with other people's money.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's got about 55 coaches. So.
I'll take that check. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not complaining. I mean, I'm not complaining or saying you did wrong.
I don't know if it was even a conversation with the Glazers afterward. Like, I don't know if they even realized it, but they do now. But that comes out of your player costs. And
but they're in the playoffs for the first time in 13 years. You can't be upset about $250,000.
Well, they're not hosting the game. If they're hosting, they might make more money, but. You know, they get a little bit of money. I mean, the playoffs is really not about outside of the – if you can host the game in Phillips Stadium, it's mm-hmm. good. But, like, for the players get more during the regular season. They don't get squad douche compared. It's all about rings now.
Well, that's what stunk for the Lightning this year is, you know, how many playoff games did they miss out at?
Oh, that's like $1 million a game, I think, for them.
Yeah, because your really player costs – the salaries are minimal for the players in the playoffs.
Yeah, nothing.
Normally during the regular season, your salary costs eat up a lot of your profits. When you make the playoffs and go on deep runs and play lots of home games, that's when you make your money as an owner.
Yes.
You know, when they played in 2015 when they went to the Stanley Cup final, not only did they make it to the Stanley Cup final, but they played 26 out of a possible 28 games that
God
postseason,
bless them.
Which meant
God bless
about
them.
Half of them were home. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah, you're making $13, $14 million.
In a best-of-seven series, you get three or four at home. But, I mean, they almost played the maximum amount of games you could play in that run.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of home games. And, you know, that's how you build franchises and make money as a team and then have more to invest in, you know, even, you know, the players, although there's a salary cap, but even the off the ice stuff and mm-hmm. fan stuff and all kinds of things is those home games. And, you know, Lightning missed that this year. And, you know, that's where, you know, winning divisions and, you know, how many home games did Robert Kraft have for the last 20 years?
Oh, God. I mean, yeah. And you know, for the Rays, too. I mean, you think mm-hmm. about, like, you know, how many years do we – Yep. talk about them not being able to draw any fans. And all I remember is from the previous year, I thought they could never top, you know, that atmosphere, game 4 and 5, that divisional series. And to think that there would have been World Series. I went to the World Series in 2008. There's nothing like it. Like, mm-hmm. that place was the roof was coming off. And, you know, it would have been so great, you know, to for Rays fans to see a run like that. Imagine beating the Yankees at Tropicana Field to win a series on a walk-off home run, you know?
Like, my oldest asked me about, he was over Christmas time, hey, let's watch that Kiermaier to Adames to Darno play.
Unbelievable.
That was in game 4. That was just, in, I mean.
Yes, I was there for it.
The Astros were starting to grab momentum, and then that, you know, that relay was tremendous. So we watched it, I think it was Christmas Day or the day after he wanted to, just randomly brought it up. He's like, okay, let's watch it, you know, and.
One of the greatest plays
incredible.
I've ever seen.
Oh,
yeah.
The crowd, I mean, just being there was absolutely incredible.
The place blew up. It just absolutely blew up. You know, I was sitting there, I was, I don't know, behind the third base dugouts, quite a few rows back, but down in the lower bowl there. And I'm telling you, man, people were just, you could see it coming, and you were like, he's got a chance.
Yep.
He's got. And Adames is, you know, the transfer and the throw from Adames was just.
Altuve scores there. I think the Astros end up taking the lead in that inning.
I do too. It was such
a big
play.
They had all the momentum. They had everything.
Yeah. They really did.
Yeah.
And it was something. But You know, they didn't go on to win it that year. They didn't win last year. They made it back to the World Series. Now Blake Snell is gone.
No, I could still contend they won that series that year. I mean,
well, you know, maybe
the Astros won all three of their home games, and you know, I didn't listen for trash cans. I didn't know back then, but
all I know is that Glasnow went to Houston for game five, and I'm listening. I think I was in Hawaii at the time, and I was listening on the internet or something. I don't know if I was listening or watching, you know, like MLB.com with strike one, strike two. And I saw where he gave up six consecutive hits. And I said, there is no way that a guy that throws 100 miles an hour. And then I saw the highlights. I was like, come on. Like, he throws 101 and guys are sitting on curveballs? Come on. There's no way. And, of course, there was a way, but it wasn't a legal way.
Well, he was definitely tipping pitches, but did they illegally figure that out and signal that, or legally? We won't know. Because it was pretty obvious his hand position was different for fastballs.
That's what
and
you
curveballs.
Said, yeah.
I mean, that was pretty obvious once they showed the replay back and you saw it. But
yeah. Well.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
We've got sports, man, going all over the place. We got the Bucks, of course, getting ready for their trip to Washington on a short week. Yeah. We're going to talk to Tom Brady, I think, on Wednesday. We've got practice today. Some Zoom calls later on, I think, with Levante David and Jason Pierre-Paul and some others. Tom Jones, I guess, will be on the show tomorrow.
He will be, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Steven Stamkos, the Lightning Open training camp. We haven't talked about that yet.
Oh, that's right. I forgot. We completely blew that off. What about – so now here's the thing that's encouraging. Tell me if I'm wrong about this. So you lose Nikita Kucherov, which you cannot replace a talent like that. He sees the ice too well and all that. However, for the balance of the most important games last year, you didn't have Stamkos, and you won a cup.
He played five shifts in the whole Stanley Cup. Return
and,
to play.
And I still get goosebumps when I think about or see that goal. But if there was a way, and he hasn't done this for a while, that Stamkos stays healthy, he still could he still be one of the elite scorers? In other words, could you make up for the loss of Kucherov with the return of a Stamkos in some way?
Well, I mean, look, you know, Stamkos is a much better shot than Kuch. I mean, you know, Stamkos is he's one of the top two or three shooters in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he's not nearly as creative as Kucherov. I mean, Kucherov sees the game a whole different way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, you're taking Kuch out and you're adding Stamkos. So the top line, at least at practice day one, was Point, Palat, and Stamkos. So okay, you basically inserted Stamkos where Kuch was.
I'll ride with that.
No, absolutely. I think from a line standpoint, I think you're going to be fine. Steven Stamkos has played extremely well on the wing with Point as his center.
Right.
You know, Stamkos has always wanted to be a center. But once Point was added to his line, he was happy to move to wing.
Okay.
And because Point makes people around him better. I mean, Point still
he's just so
he's
good
still the engine that drove that line, even with Stamkos and Kuch on that line last year. Is it was Point that would drive the line. I mean, you know, and he'd get a lot of points too, but Kuch and Stamkos benefited from that. But Braden Point is just incredible.
Yep.
So as long as Point's centering that line, Stamkos, it's going to set up that shot a lot, and Palat goes digs the pucks out of the corners, the top line will be fine. Where I still want to see what the Lightning do is on the power play. Because when they have, you know, Stamkos, Hedman, Kucherov around the top of the power play, it's phenomenal. Right. When Stamkos was out, it struggled a lot at times. And even to the point where they weren't even putting Hedman on that unit for a long time, they're putting Sergachev. Now you're going to not have Kuch on that line. So how are you going to structure your power play? That's the one thing I worry about going into the season is, you know, it's been such a powerful weapon the last two seasons, the power play.
You get the one-timer back, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You get that slap shot back, and then which what you miss is Kucherov mm-hmm. with the little shovel inside to point right. all the time. He would just, you know.
But in the return to play, when Stamkos wasn't on that left wing, everybody shaded to Kuz.
They cheated.
I mean, that's the thing is when Stamkos on the ice, they cheat to Stamkos. And that's right. what would open up
openings.
Plays for Kuz
that's
to
right.
either shoot or make an assist
or pass
it.
Point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they react to that now? And that'll be very telling what they do. And they may go into the season trying to figure that out still. So
right.
I mean, there's no preseason games. It's a very short training camp. I mean, it opened.
That's weird to
opened
me.
On
do,
Monday.
Do you need preseason games for hockey? Do you think, or do you just put on the ice, skates?
They're going to do a couple scrimmages as they did in the return to play too before they went up to Toronto and then Edmonton.
Yeah.
Look, I think preseason games. I think it helps for conditioning. But if nobody's getting preseason, fine. What yeah. I think the preseason games really help is the younger players trying to make the roster.
Yeah, it's evaluation. Right.
And showing what you can do, not just in practice and in scrimmages, but against other teams.
Right.
We've seen some players make big impacts in the past. Braden Point, when he probably made the team a year sooner than they projected. And a lot of it was how he played in the preseason and in practice, too. I think it'll hurt those guys a little bit, but you're going to have a taxi squad this year, which is different. And some of those guys may be on there. I mean, with the COVID protocols and such like that, and they're allowing emergency call-ups immediately this year.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, if you were short a guy, say all of a sudden you only had five defensemen on the roster, you had to play short a game before you could call somebody up on an emergency call-up. Now you can call them up instantly. You're going to have taxi squads to help with all this. So, because, you never know if you're going to end up with players on a COVID list and you're shorthanded instantly. So,
yeah,
it's going to be a little different in that regard. So, but – Stamkos being healthy and looking good in practice for day one is a good thing. It wasn't a full practice. They split up. There's like 42, 43 guys in camp. So they're split between two groups at this point. So, one group practices. So, the Stamkos line was there, and the second line was Barry Boulay and Ross Colton and some of the younger guys. And, so in each practice, as they split them up, it's not, it wasn't the A team and the B team. It was a mix of both, so.
Is there any, you mentioned Boulay, is there any of these guys that are going to make it? They're going to be like this year's, Sorelli's and...
Well, I think Barry Boulay has a chance to. Alex Volkov should make this
Volkov
roster too.
Showed up last year
Played one game in the Stanley Cup final there. You don't have Paquette now. You don't have Braden Coburn on the back. Cal Foote is a defenseman. Can he make that
draft
leap?
Pick. Yep.
Can he make that leap and be ready this year? I think mm-hmm. There's no question he's a talent and will be up here. I don't know if he'll be up to start.
Right.
I think some of it will depend on how he does in camp.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. But, you've got Mitchell Stevens is still here. Carter Verhaeghe's not anymore. He signed with the Panthers. But there'll be a couple young guys on the roster in that. But for the most part, it's going to be a lot of the same team. I mean, your top line's going to be presumably Stamkos, Palat, Point. Your second line's going to be Sorelli, Killorn, Tyler Johnson. Your third line is going to be Gord, Gaudreau, and Coleman. And so it's your fourth line that gets shaken up a little bit because you don't have Paquette centering there. So is Volkov there? Pat Maroon's there, obviously. You've got some changing on the fourth line and Matthew Joseph, players like that. So we'll see who they end up keeping there. But presumably those will be your typical lines. Now, they can shake things up a little bit. I mean, we saw how good Gord, Coleman, and Gaudreau were in the restart in the whole playoffs.
Yeah, they're very, very – this is a really great hockey team. I mean, come on. I mean, they got Vasilevskiy in that. I mean, this is a really good hockey team.
And that's the other thing, too. And if you're a Lightning fan worried about losing Cooch, and it's a huge loss. I mean, he's the most creative player on the team, arguably one of the top players in the world.
He was league MVP a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, for just his overall game and how good he can be. And as he's improved defensively in his responsibilities, I think he's even more valuable.
Right,
but they're going to go through a whole season. But last season, if you'd have lost Cooch, you didn't have Gaudreau on the team. You didn't have Coleman on the team.
Didn't have Stamkos.
Stamkos was there most of it. But had you lost Kucherov for last season?
Oh yeah. You're a better hockey team now.
You're getting a whole season
trades.
With those guys. I mean, you don't have Coburn. You don't have Paquette. You don't have Verhaeghe. But
they got guys to replace those guys.
Yeah, but like I said, I mean, Coleman and Gaudreau.
You got Killorn back. Yeah, Tyler Johnson.
Yeah, exactly. But Coleman and Gaudreau were additions at the trade deadline last year. But, I mean, these are top. And the reason they traded for them is they had them for more than 1 year.
They get them this year, yeah.
Yeah, at really good, you know, rates for your salary cap this year, or, you know, pay. Right. So, you know, the Lightning are still one of the most talented teams in the NHL, even without Kucherov. I mean, anytime Absolutely. You've got the best goaltender in the world, or one of the top two
there.
Or three.
Start there.
Maybe the best defenseman in the world.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
One of the best shooters in the world.
Yeah.
You've got...
Best center in the world.
Maybe, you know, a 200-foot center in Braden Point and Anthony Cirelli.
Right, right.
You know, you've got enough talent on this team. You just got to get in the top four of your division.
Right.
I mean, that's at the end of the day, just be the top four of your division. And, you know, so I think, really, it's all about your start. Because every game's a division game. So you start losing early, that means division foes are winning and getting points, and you're not.
Yeah.
Then trying to catch up, you know, as you win games, that's great, but every time you lose a game, you lose points.
Right.
Because you're not playing the Western Conference for, you know, 28 or 30 games a year.
Yeah. Well, look, they know how to navigate, and like I said, I think mm-hmm. the division they're in is still, there's some good teams, I don't think it's as tough as what they're used to.
I would agree.
You know, with Boston, Pittsburgh, all those teams. So see how they do, but it's back.
Weird is it going to look with Zdeno Chara in a Capitals uniform?
Yeah, he really should have retired, don't you think? But did the Caps need another bully? I mean, did they really need another guy to lay the wood?
Look, is Zdeno Chara a top two or top four defenseman anymore? Probably not. But could he be your third pair? Third pair defenseman and do some good things for you? Sure.
He signed for
$795,000 or something?
Oh, it's not the money. He just wants to play. But like,
I mean, but as you're evaluating whether you should sign Chara and, you know, use him, as you didn't pay him top four defenseman money.
Is he going to be your fourth line guy?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, signing Pat Maroon. You didn't bring him in here to be a top six forward.
No.
You brought him in to help you on the back end, you know, on the bottom two lines and be physical and be a presence. And, you know, that's what I think they're looking for Chara to do in Washington. So,
yeah, it'll be interesting. All right, well, this will do it for our podcast. Like I said, a little bit early, that we do have Tom Jones tomorrow. Rest of the week, we'll be talking, I'm sure, with Matt Baker about the college football championship, Alabama. And we get, of course, the Ohio State Buckeyes, which I have you heard anything about Justin Fields, by the way? Has he got any, how many crack ribs did he have?
I have not heard.
We're still waiting. It's been very quiet
over
there.
Maybe the Mr. Miyagi and the tent healed it, you know.
Yeah, and they rubbed dirt on him. I just thought it was, you know, I tweeted something out about this. Like, they asked Fields, like, well, what was the diagnosis? He goes, diagnosis? They didn't give me a diagnosis. They shot me up and sent me back out there. I mean, it was just like war or something, you know. It's like, good old college football, man. It's about the student athletes.
It's like Varsity Blues. I mean, you know, what was the coach's name? Yeah. I can remember.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. I just
23
watched
district championships. I can't think of the Kilmer.
Kilmer. Coach Kilmer. Yeah. Had the statue out front.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so anyway, we'll have lots of fun this week. Make sure you check out the podcast. We're here every Monday through Friday. And listen, make sure if you're looking for a party platter in the Tampa Bay area, you have to try Mr. Empanada. It doesn't matter what year it is, 2021. That's where you're going to find the best food at Mr. Empanada. What is an empanada? Glad you asked. I'll tell you. You take your favorite foods, whatever that is, place them inside a pocket of homemade dough. It's cooked perfectly until it's golden brown, piping hot. And their empanadas, just a fresh twist on some old favorites. You can order delicious menu items made from scratch, right, where you don't get everywhere, like soups or salads, Cuban sandwiches. Just order online at MrEmpanada.com or call any one of their 7 convenient locations in Tampa Bay where Latin food quality and service meet. It's Mr. Empanada. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.